With us this evening is Bart Lozier again. Actually, Bart was one of the last ones to close our show off in the fall. Welcome back. Bart is with the AIDS Foundation. And so many times when we've talked, we more or less concentrated on safer sex programs. Mm-hmm. But let's expand a little bit more and talk about what the foundation's all about, what it does for the community, and how people can get connected with the foundation if need be.
Well, the foundation is actually very large compared to the amount of staff we have. We have a tremendous amount of volunteers that help us accomplish an incredible amount of work. Basically, the AIDS Foundation does two major areas of work. One is in social services. That's helping people who are dealing with AIDS to get their needs met, whatever these needs may be. Now, we may be able to help them directly, or we may be able to direct them to other programs that are available in the city that they might qualify for that might be able to help them in their problems. We have a case management team so that somebody who might need consistent help can have a manager assigned to them so that they can have someone working with them long term, or they can just have whatever their particular needs met at any particular time. They would need to call the foundation up, though, to become a client. It's not something you can do overnight. Unfortunately, so many people get themselves into an emergency type situation where at that point, then they say, now I need to reach out and get help today. And I really encourage anybody who has a T-cell count lower than 200, which would be a clinical diagnosis today of AIDS, or anyone who has any symptomatic problems with HIV disease, to give a call to the foundation and to get signed up today so that should you have any needs in the future, at the very least, you'll have people who know the system and know their ways in and out so that they can help assist you better.
Bart, you said as far as having their needs met, is the AIDS Foundation Houston able to meet the current needs level? And what are some of those specific needs that a person with AIDS, HIV might be faced with?
Well, the AIDS Foundation itself provides very discreet or specific needs, as well as do many other organizations in the city. Even though there is very little duplication of services, there are as much as 30 or 40 different agencies in the city that try to help people with AIDS in one way or another, whether it's like the assistance fund, which helps with paying people's premiums so that they can maintain their insurance, or to help with prescription costs for those who have insurance but can't afford the deductibles and other things. That's just one example of another agency that helps with a very specific function that no one else does. The AIDS Foundation itself can help with some transportation services, as well as the American Red Cross, which also helps with transportation services. There's other services, such as our Stone Soup Food Pantry. It's one of the food pantries available in the city to help people with AIDS.
And it's just moved, hasn't it?
It has just moved. It's actually just opening, I think, this month.
Grand
opening of our new Stone Soup facility, which is on Lower Westheimer. It's very exciting. I'm glad we finally have a large facility with areas of air-conditioned areas where people can relax and wait until they can get in line, you know, to be able to get their foods. It is one of the only places in the city, though, where someone can come and collect a week's worth of groceries, just like going to a grocery store, except you don't actually pay a bill. So that's another service we offer. We do have housing resources of a variety of different kinds. We do have an apartment complex, which has up to 30 units. And, of course, there's always a waiting list for that. But for our clients, you could qualify for that. For short-term housing, for people who are just getting situated and need a place to stay for at least a couple months till they get on their feet, there's the McAdory House, which was the first of its kind in the country for short-term housing. We also have grants that occasionally will pay for temporary housing, emergency housing, whether in certain hotels that we set people up in or whatever, till we can help them get on their feet. We also refer people to other emergency housing sources. We do a lot of referrals for people who need help that the AIDS Foundation itself may not be able to provide. And as you may be aware, the AIDS crisis has not slowed down in any respect, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. The numbers of people with AIDS in the Houston area who are actually living with AIDS are well exceed around 3,000 people who've been diagnosed out of the total of over 7,000, I think, now who have been diagnosed since 1981. And of those 3,000, almost half of those people are clients of the AIDS Foundation. And we try to get their needs met, but if you can just imagine, helping just a handful of people with their monthly rents means that's several thousand dollars right off the top of the bat each month. And a lot of the monies we have to be able to help people financially come specifically from donations from the community. They are not necessarily paid by grants. People sometimes are under the impression, though, that many of the salaries at the AIDS Foundation come from, you know, the donations go to that, and that is not necessarily true. Most of the salaries at the AIDS Foundation are coming directly from grants, and that any monies that people donate are going to help the people in need, and that is why we desperately do need assistance today even more than ever.
How many people actually work for the AIDS Foundation?
Right now, I think we have a staff of between 25 and 30 people.
Okay. And this is an organization that just started a few years ago, right? Beginning.
Well, actually, we're one of the oldest aid service agencies. We started in 1982, so we're actually one of the oldest in the country that was specifically formed to deal with the AIDS crisis. And even though we have 25 to 30 staff members at this point, we have almost 500 volunteers who work with the staff in getting this incredible job done. There's so many different areas in which people can get involved with as volunteers. There's about 25 different arenas that people can get involved in depending on their time constraints, their interests, and all these other areas. So certainly, even if you could not assist with financial help, giving of your time is another great way to make a tremendous difference, and it's primarily the only way in which the AIDS Foundation can accomplish its many goals.
Now, you have a training course for people who want to volunteer?
Yes, it is a weekend training course, and what I would recommend is that if people do want to get involved as volunteers, they can go ahead and send for a volunteer application, which after they fill out, they come in for an interview to discuss further the opportunities and their interests, and then they're set up with a volunteer training weekend, which we do one weekend a month.
And you put together a calendar of events that happen for people, or do you deal with volunteers also?
I do a lot of work. My team, I have an outreach team, of course, that's trying to teach the Safer Sex workshops and house parties, and we do those all the time.
House parties, huh?
Yes, the Safer Sex workshops we do out in people's homes. Instead of them coming to us, we go to them. If they get a group of people together, we'll come out anytime, anywhere, and teach safer sex issues. It's a lot of fun. We make it entertaining first. And it's a free program out of our education department, and it's a part of my wellness program that I run. I also have a lot of other people who work with me on the wellness program to get the ideas of health and wellness out to people who are dealing with HIV so they can learn there are many other things you can do beyond just working with a doctor and taking your medications to maintain your health.
A lot of that has to do with how you feel yourself. I mean, the feeling inside of how you deal with your illness.
Definitely. It has a lot to do with your outlook on life, how you're dealing with this particular illness, how much information you learn about this illness. We try to let people know there's so much information out there, and there's lots of resources to learn about anything and everything they need to know about this disease.
One thing that was really interesting that I saw during the parade, among many different things, was that people from the AIDS Mastery Workshop were walking down the street and saying, "We're out, we're proud, and we're HIV positive, and we're out about that." Mm-hmm. And it was a very positive message that, you know, if you can be out about being positive, that, you know, you've got nothing to fear, in a sense.
I agree totally. Just like someone who is out being gay or lesbian and how important and how impactful that is on your life, it's just as important to be open and out about being HIV positive. I've been talking about that for years, anywhere and everywhere, anyone who will listen to me talking about living with HIV. I've been HIV positive myself for 9 or 10 years and feel very strongly that the efforts I've made to keep myself healthy beyond just taking medication and seeing a doctor occasionally has made all the difference into why I stay so healthy.
What are some of those things, Bart?
Many different aspects of wellness is the way in which I approach health. Many people only think of their health in terms of physical health. And yet, there's so many other factors that are just as important, such as looking at the mental, the emotional, and spiritual aspects of health. Just in the physical alone, there's taking care of yourself, eating right, that's good nutrition, exercise, proper rest, there's seeing your doctor, working with your doctor, taking medications, playing safe so you don't putting yourself at risk for further infection or infecting anyone else. And then there's the emotional aspects of dealing with your self-esteem, which is so powerful and so important. There's the mental aspects, learning about this disease, taking control of this disease, feeling like you have control over this disease, which many of us have a lot of control over. Early intervention being one of the keys here. The earlier you get tested and find out that you've got this virus, the better your chances are against it. If you wait until you get sick to even begin to worry about it, that's probably a little too late. And so I encourage people, get tested early, do something about it early. Call me if you're worried about getting tested, you're worried about the test results. If you tested positive and you don't want to know what to do, or if you've been positive and you don't know what to do, give me a call at the AIDS Foundation. That's why I run this wellness program.
All those things that you said about taking care of yourself if you're HIV positive are things that we all should be doing.
Yes, very much so. Wellness is for everyone.
I noticed on your calendar that you have one of your sessions has to do with teenagers and children with HIV. Is that a growing population?
The teenage population and children are definitely a fast-growing population that's affected by HIV. Now, teenagers, of course, are very sexually active, or tend to be, and thus they are at very great risk for getting infected with HIV. But a lot of them won't ever find out, possibly, until they're older. But because HIV has so affected so many of us, it's devastating families entirely. It's not just an individual with HIV that's affected. It's their entire families. If they're a parent, then you also have children that are affected. And what you're referring to is the Mastery Weekend, which Jack had mentioned a little bit earlier. And the AIDS Mastery Weekend, which is a wonderfully powerful emotional weekend for people with HIV or those who are affected by HIV. They do have classes for children. These are children or adolescents, teenagers, who have AIDS in their family, whether it's brother, sister, father, mother, and who may want to, you know, come to terms with it a little bit better, or just may want to go and talk to others who are dealing with it. It's a very powerful weekend, and I do encourage anybody who's either dealing with HIV themselves or those who have it in their families to investigate these options.
What are the biggest changes that you've seen take place during your involvement with the AIDS Foundation?
Well, the changes, of course, are the fact that the virus has now spread into all populations. But one thing that hasn't really changed, unfortunately, is that most people still don't feel they need to know anything about this disease until it impacts them directly. That includes safer sex issues. Most people do not today practice safer sex unless it has touched them directly, unless they directly feel they are at risk by knowing someone that got the virus a way they could get it.
Now, are you talking about the gay male population?
I'm talking everyone, but the gay male population scares me the most because we're not just talking about 1 out of 90 or 1 out of 100, 1 out of 300 people like you might find in the heterosexual population. You're talking about 1 out of 2 or 3 in the gay male population. And this includes the bisexual male population, those males who think they can go off and have sex in public areas outside of the Montrose area and somehow not be at risk. These are people who are still today, out of their denial, still feeling, this is why I don't have to practice safer sex. I can just find someone that I think is lower risk.
What about the report about the effectiveness of the condom use?
That's a very good point to bring up because it's something I've been battling for years, and now here's another example of how something gets into the media and is blown all out of proportion. This is actually not a study on how effective condoms were. What they took were 11 studies that were done and did a certain type of analysis called, I think it was meta-analysis. I couldn't really explain to you what it all means, but basically trying to compile different types of data into one thing that you can get an idea from. And out of this type of analysis, she came up with the fact that, well, condoms are only 87% effective for pregnancy, but only 60-something percent, like 65 or 67% effective at protecting you from sexually transmitted diseases, including HIV. What it failed to really mention in these reports in the papers was in many of these studies, you had people who didn't use condoms consistently. It didn't say that these people even were ever educated on how to use them properly. And certainly, if a condom breaks on you or slips off during or after sex, you are just as much at risk as if you hadn't used a condom at all. But if a condom is used properly, which it means people need to learn how to use them properly, if it's used properly and it does not slip off or break on you, then basically you can consider yourself protected.
We'll say, hey, you know, in a moment of passion, here we are, the condom breaks, mm-hmm. What should we do?
I would say discontinue having sex at that point until you get a fresh condom on. That means having condoms and lubricants, that means more than one condom, with you at any one time. Now, if used properly, a condom should work for you almost every time. Most people who use condoms consistently have never.
That's so clinical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, how would you, say this happened to you,
uh-huh.
How would you go about maybe making the fact that we need to be safe and that we're going to use this condom
mm-hmm.
be part of the lovemaking or part of the act so that it's not just, hey, we'll stop everything and let's, you know, take care of the the clinical things. Is there a way to go about that so that
certainly.
It's not just a turn off?
I would, when I was talking about it, that I'm sorry, it might have sounded a little clinical. I'm talking about people who apparently are already using condoms, and hopefully you have more than one right next to you so that it's convenient. But first of all, if you're going to be protected, and that means using condoms with a partner, that means having condoms and lubricant there when you need them. Don't wait until, like, let's say he's aroused and now you're ready, you know, after you've been messing around for a while, now let's get up and go find the equipment we'll need to protect ourselves. If you're doing that, you're probably not going to take the time to protect yourself. So have the stuff there when you need them, at the time you need them, and make it all a part of the sex act. That means you can put it on yourself while your partner's pleasuring you, or they can put it on you while you're doing other things. You don't have to keep it apart from the sex act by any means. It can be very erotic to use condoms. That's why I encourage everybody who has never been to a safer sex workshop, I implore them all to go, male, female, gay, or straight. Need to learn about and talk about all of these issues so you can learn to incorporate safer sex into your sex life.
We're talking with Bart Lozier from the AIDS Foundation. Bart, reading the paper every day, there's something new about medicine, what's coming out, what's going on. How do you keep up to date with all these things that are going on? And some of them, you know, some of the headlines, well, another new breakthrough. Well, a lot of that stuff isn't.
Well, first of all, I tell people never believe more than 15 to 20% about what you read in the paper, because a lot of it is out of context. And since people don't have the basic facts about AIDS, which is the big problem, since they don't have the basic facts about this HIV disease, they don't know how to interpret things that they read in the paper. So they keep thinking, oh, this is a cure. I don't think we'll ever see a cure in our lifetimes, but I do hope we can see very effective treatments. But every time they say something in the paper, basically, it's a study that they may have seen either in a test tube, which doesn't mean it necessarily works in the body. We know that time and again. Everything I see that looks very hopeful may be hopeful, but I always take it with a grain of salt. You know, I have to be realistic.
I think that's really important, like looking right now with what the little mind discoveries and like looking at what benefits may be there, but also what risk. And are they sometimes, it seems like grabbing at straws.
Well, they're trying so many different things, and whatever happens to make it in the media is what we hear. Just like during the International AIDS Conference, there wasn't a lot of wonderfully exciting new things that we've heard about. But then again, we're communicating so much better that we are hearing about these things constantly. You don't have to wait to one meeting a year to get AIDS information anymore. But unfortunately, a lot of misinformation also gets out in the media, like the Concord study that seemed to indicate in France that people who were on AZT didn't seem to be benefiting from early intervention with AZT, and yet other studies that said just the opposite were pretty much ignored. And
I also know a few human beings that will be glad to tell you that their lives have been greatly affected and enhanced by AZT, that it sure seems to work for them.
I'll be one of the first people to say if it was not for AZT and other antiviral drugs, I probably wouldn't be alive today, much less as healthy as I am. So I certainly encourage people to look at the options. Every drug works different on everybody else. Don't listen to someone else to make a decision on what you decide to do with your own life.
So a person should be an advocate for their own health care, find out as much information as possible from very many different sources, not just their doctor, but their doctor and maybe people at the AIDS Foundation and other information that is available.
And not just friends or myths and rumors. Too many people decide what they want to do about this disease depending on what they've heard from somebody else. Well, I've heard rumors that AZT is poison, so I'm not going to take that. That is a rumor. That is something that certainly you could have said maybe 8 years ago back when AZT, or you know, 5 years ago when AZT was at a very high dosage. But today at the lower dosages, people tolerate it very well. Not everybody, but most people, or else they wouldn't approve it.
Do you see hope?
I see a lot of hope out there. There's so many things that they're looking into, that they're investigating, combining different medications, looking at ways to try to sometimes restore the immune system, which is my big frustration, having so many friends with AIDS. They currently don't have a way to restore the immune system, but if they can stop it from getting that serious before it's that serious, keep it at a good, healthy level, there's a lot of hope out there. And I certainly am very, very hopeful. I'm very positive that we're going to find better and better treatments every year that go by. So that means we need to keep ourselves as healthy as possible for as long as possible.
What can we all do?
Well, there are so many different things you can do depending on where your interests lie. If you're a person with HIV, learn everything you can about this disease and how to take control of it. Learn how to get involved, whether you're directly affected or not. And for people who have not been affected by this disease, get the facts. There's a new Surgeon General's report that, thank God, has now finally been being released. We're going to be getting those at the AIDS Foundation. We haven't had one since 1988. The information hasn't changed drastically, but the new reports are more graphic. They give more specific information to help people and give them answers for how to live their lives and not be affected by this.
What's the magic number people can call?
They can call the AIDS Foundation's hotline at 524-AIDS. We generally have hotline volunteers there to answer questions directly. And if we don't, the phone is forwarded to an electronic hotline until you can reach a volunteer. Say, if you want to talk to someone personally, just keep calling back till you do reach someone in person. Otherwise, you can get information electronically. If you want to reach me, you can call me at the main number of the AIDS Foundation, which is 623-6796. That's also the number you can call if you need educational presentations. We come out anytime, anywhere, to any groups, and we'll do educational presentations of any sort having to do with HIV disease, whether it's HIV in the workplace, safer sex workshops, or just general AIDS workshops.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I'm sure there's a lot of people who are probably heading out of town listening to us as they're heading down those freeways. Bart Lozier of the AIDS Foundation, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you both.